Let's go! 3, 2, 1!
Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. I'm Dave.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brad.
And today we have a super special guest with us, Kelly Ventrisco.
Hi, guys.
Kelly, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a dietitian, and I've been a dietitian for 5 years now. I work in a hospital, mainly in a neonatal intensive care unit with babies. And I'm actually going back to school to be a neonatal nurse practitioner at this point. So I'm in the midst of schoolwork. Just got done with my finals and passed. So
needle, needle?
Yeah, they make a lot of money.
Say that 5 times fast.
Neonatal nurse. Just once. That's all I need to learn. But yeah, so you the demand for neonatal, I know the demand is super high. Like pretty
super
much
high.
You can get a job anywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We actually have a huge shortage in Ohio. They only had one neonatal intensive care unit bed at one point in November.
Wow.
In the whole state of Ohio. So
only one bed.
Only one bed available.
Crib.
And isn't like Grant here, isn't that the big like birthing place?
Which one?
Grant.
Yeah, Grant.
Grant Riverside.
Riverside, Mount Carmel, St. Anne's.
So basically all of them.
All of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Ohio State's a big one too.
But they don't have any needle natal.
Neonatal.
They all, you can call it a NICU. They all have NICUs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they were all full.
Okay, so there's, oh, that's, I get what you're saying. So there's so much need for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So we're going to talk about research. Like,
get off this. Moving on from
the moving to the research. So yes, the research.
But as we were discussing beforehand, not only, you know, do you specialize in neonatals, but you've more times than not been covering for adults and covered in ICUs,
mm-hmm,
and adult population, doing diet education. So why this is relevant, because we're talking about research and what guides our practice, and maybe slightly different from practices of strength and conditioning, but mm-hmm, dietetics in general is peer-reviewed, research-based, and those are the guidelines we follow. So from time to time, research contradicts itself.
Yep.
Maybe more times than not. Who knows? And we were discussing this a couple weeks ago of how, you know, I just attended this one ICU conference or webcast, and one of the very prominent doctors was saying, like, in the 30 years he's been practicing and been in dietetics and leading research, like, this is the craziest time. You'd think that the sky is falling now just because everyone's up in arms with dietetics and nutrition research. And this is more clinically based, and I'd say a lot of listeners are not in a hospital setting, and mm-hmm, they're just going for like health and fitness, but it still is the same concept of how research is out there. It's the best and brightest, and then there's more research, and oh, what we've been doing all along hasn't been right, and back and forth. So where Kelly comes into play is being very relevant in the midst of that and kind of getting some resentment or, you know, anger from the public. Like, what, eggs are bad now? Now it's good? Coffee's good? Now
it's
bad?
Yeah, I've heard all that. Like, it's flip-flops.
Yeah. So,
well, I mean, we're going to see here in about a month with all these new ads on TV and the magazines, because it's the new, you know, first of the year, so all those new resolutions.
Yeah.
But everything I see, it's, you know, blind tested, clinically tested.
Yeah.
Everything's tested.
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes back, and like you said, in 5 years, it's hogwash.
Yeah, I think a lot of the general public probably doesn't know is, like, there's scales of research and what's the best, the most relevant research, and then population size influence the outcomes, but also the bias that we bring to the table. So if, Mike, you make a supplement company, which, you know, you're able to do,
mm-hmm,
and you say, I want to do good research and prove that my product's superior to all these other products, so you start doing research, you already come into it with a bias,
mm-hmm,
and you are now funding research, and you're not lying or doing anything unethical, but you're just funding research, and you're trying to show an outcome. So maybe you do a bunch of research, and some outcomes aren't what is in your best interest, mm-hmm, what you don't like. Maybe you don't publish that research, and maybe you only publish the research that kind of helps your bottom line.
And see, I've done a lot of that. Well, not me.
Have you now?
No, I haven't done a lot of that. But
this is where we pause the podcast and get your confession.
I've read a lot of articles where I'll read one, you know, one test and then read another. It's basically the exact same test, but these are skewed results over here and these are skewed results over here. They're two different kind of results in the two things. And it's almost like the one that talks good about the product was published or endorsed by the company pushing the product.
Yeah.
And then the other one, they say, oh, this is some independent third party, mm-hmm. and they don't like our product so much, so they're going to say bad things about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So right off the bat, they're trying to say, well, they're not good to listen to because they have something against us.
Yeah, I mean, research costs money.
Yeah.
And, I mean, who's going to pay for the research?
Mm-hmm.
The people that are going to benefit from it.
Yep.
Are you going to pay for research when you have no benefit from it, when mm-hmm. you're not going to gain anything from it? So you're just going to dump money into something where you're literally not seeing anything returned to you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where you have that kind of conflict of interest arise because, mm-hmm. okay, well, a third-party independent company won't fund my research because they're not going to gain anything from it. But this one company will fund the research. Mm-hmm. I just have to maybe go along.
Now, I'm assuming it's a lot different in your guys' field because I hope it's more kind of cut and dry, but it's probably not. When it comes to the like health and fitness side, especially strength and conditioning, they'll do a test, and I'm like, I did this test with 100 athletes. I'm not telling you what kind of athletes they are, and it turns out that these 100 athletes were college-bound or
NASCAR.
But they were, like, top-level athletes. And that was very weird.
Sorry, it was bothering me.
Sorry, there was something on Brad's head, and it was picked away very lovely.
Gently.
Yeah, so...
wasn't me this time.
No. So, where was I? Oh, okay. So, there's these tests that come out, and they'll get, say, 100 people. And it turns out after you dig more into this research, these 100 athletes were the top-level 100 athletes. So, it's like it's skewed. Like, oh, this works. These guys increase their strength doing these movements and these exercises with bands or with chains and stuff like that. I'm like, well, no kidding. They're phenomenal athletes already.
Mm-hmm.
So, seeing a change on them, even how skewed it is, you're going to see that little bit of change. But if I take that to a wide range of people, that's not going to work the same. Me doing power deadlifts with somebody that has bad knees, bad backs, how is that going to make them any stronger? And a lot of these tests, they don't do that. They say, let's do this exercise, it's going to make you stronger. Well, it makes certain people stronger. Or then you see these men's fitness magazines, oh, these exercises are the best to give you that six-pack. And I'm like, no, because you do that, you do these crunches or these planks or these stuff like that, and then they go and eat six pizzas a day. That's really not going to help them.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the media does it, or just any program in general online, they make these exercises or these programs, and they skew the results to say, look, we did this with 100 people, and they all did great. And a lot of it is if I take 100 people, if I just go to Easton right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's probably 100 really out of shape people. I can find 100 people and put all of them on a treadmill and say walk an hour a day for the next 60 days. They're all going to get better, but how better are they going to get?
Yeah, I think they brought up three big main points there. One is like who's funding it, two, population size and having a bias with that, and then three, trying to purposely skew stats based off of what you're selling.
Yeah.
So like you're saying, if you have untrained individuals, you're going to see a greater percentage increase in performance or benefit mm-hmm. from your product or whatever, and that's obviously purposely trying to show a trend one way or another. But also, like you asked about in clinical nutrition, the problem there is, unlike having conflicts of interest where there are certain companies like Nestle will fund things and do things, and you know, I have my own opinions about that, but moreover, a lot of research is funded by grants, so you'll have like someone in a high up position, like have their PhD, say nutrition, lead researcher, whatever, they'll submit a grant to the government and get money, so the essentially government's funding research to see what the best way to manage certain disease states or whatever, and that's very appropriate. What the problem that arose that was brought up in this web conference was so much that the studies being done were showing inconsistent trends, not saying like this is beneficial at all, saying this is extremely weak evidence. And what was happening was they would do, say, specifically they're talking about immunonutrition and like arginine, omega-3s and things like that and how that reacts. And they're saying, well, these studies showed great benefit and these studies showed no benefit at all. And it was just very inconsistent. And this lead researcher is trying to rope it all in and say, what happening is you're taking, like, say, arginine or omega-3, doing a research in population with pancreatic cancer. Then you're giving it to a population of people who have sepsis. And then you have a population of people who just have respiratory failure. And, of course, you're not seeing a trend in it because these are all different populations, just like you are pointing out, if you have Olympic-level athletes or college-bound athletes or untrained people. They're going to react differently to the stimuli. So essentially, you need to have, if you're going to show a study and have guidelines, and we're talking about immunonutrition, we need to do studies specifically for pancreatic or liver cancer or whatever the disease states is, because the body's response to all these different processes are different. Mm-hmm. And they're drastically different to the point that you have such conflicting research out there. So all these different professions, like doctors, like, you guys don't know what you're doing. Nothing's showing beneficial, you don't see a correlation, and it's all up in the air. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
And do you see it ever changing? Because I see it as it's all geared by money. You know, if I throw enough money at this research or this program or anything, if I throw enough money at it and put it on the billboards and put it on TV and put it on anywhere and everywhere people can see it, people are going to buy that over anything else.
Sure. I say it is going to change, but I say that with a grain of salt, because what was presented in this is basically in a chemistry level of changes in your body and responses for sepsis. So you have this inflammatory process, and you figure out step by step what's going on, what's the body's reaction. It's going to do this, it's going to do that. And then they're like, well, we just found this out a couple years ago. We didn't know it did this, X, Y, and Z. And now we know it does X, Y, and Z. But we don't know, at least I'm not privy to how much we don't know. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly finding things out and saying, we know this is going right, this is going wrong. But we don't have the whole picture. We have just little pieces here and building this little puzzle, but we don't know how much is left on the board to put together. As soon as we have that whole picture, then we can set up saying, oh, this fits here. Here's a correlation here. This is the cause and effect. But right now, we're kind of guessing. And that's when it comes back to the supplement discussion we always have. People want supplements and take this and that, but they don't realize how little we really know. Mm-hmm. People think we know so much about the body, which we do, but we don't have it mastered. We're far from having it mastered. So until we have the whole picture, we're not going to get it figured out.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think one of the biggest things, since I just started school back in June, coming into the nursing program, learning more about pharmacology, so different medications, and you have to know, like, we have to know the mechanisms, how the medication works in the body. Well, most of that's a theory. They don't really know.
So it's, we're just guessing.
And even with some disease processes, I mean, they just don't really know. Like in my pathophysiology class that I just got done taking, there were a couple of disease processes where we just had to learn a couple different theories about why something happens, you know, maybe why you have low platelets for this reason or that reason. We're not really sure how it all came about. So we're not even really sure how the body is working. We're not sure how medications that doctors are prescribing are working. So there's no way we know about how supplements are working.
And because you don't even know what's in the supplements.
Yeah. First of all, the FDA is not even approving the supplements, most of them. I mean, some of the time. USP does. They're like an independent research group.
But see, how can they do that? How can the Food and Drug control everything else we eat but not supplements?
I don't know.
It comes, well, that's very well outlined politically in Bigger, Faster, Stronger. They did a great job covering that of how, through the act of lobbying, how those laws were bypassed. So the supplement industry.
So big money pushed them through, kind of. So
well, big money avoided the FDA getting involved and saying, oh, you know, we're not going to get involved in this. This is herbal supplements. Just don't make strong claims and to treat or prevent any diseases, and you'll be all right. So that's how the workaround, if they don't need to be involved.
Okay.
They should be involved, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you've mentioned before that where, even on Bigger, Faster, Stronger, they showed it where he just made his own product.
Yeah.
He grinds some stuff up, puts some pills together, and say, hey, here's my supplement.
But that's what you can do. And then you can hire Dave and I, we can do some research and skew some stats.
All kinds of research.
but
don't check my web history.
Yeah. But when it comes to, like, research, and I can understand how, like you mentioned before as well, that You know, you guys are just barely scratching the surface on the knowledge that is out there for nutrition and how our body reacts to it. And when it comes to strength and conditioning, it's, I mean, for the most part, it's pretty simple. It's pick stuff up and put it down. Then pick something up heavier and then put it down. Just do that over and over again, and we're going to get stronger. So it's really not, I mean, people always try to make working out more of a science than it has to be. And the science comes into just how the position of the body is. And doing things, you know, making sure you're doing this exercise that, that works well with this movement and this movement and this movement. That's the only science, is pairing things up correctly and making sure it's done in a safe and efficient way. But, again, if I do something wrong over here, yeah, I may roll an ankle or, you know, hurt something very minimal. But it seems like to you guys, if you put something bad in your body and do it over years and years and years, I can only imagine the how all the insides is just going to deteriorate down and get destroyed.
Yeah. I think with nutrition too, you can take the similar approach and really dumb things down and talk about calorie balance versus calories in, out. And maybe that's not like scientifically correct because of my energy expenditure today might be less than yesterday depending on workouts and hormone levels. But you can really dumb it down and get the same concept. If I overconsume calories, I'm going to gain weight. And same thing with healthiness and well-being. Despite going through all this research and controversy and garlic does this benefit and tomatoes has this, you know, we really try to dumb it down. And what people don't like to hear is, like, eat a variety of foods, stick more to plant-based stuff, eat colorful foods, whether it be purple, red, white, eat a variety, and don't overconsume portions. And I think that's really, like, if we don't know the big picture and we can't specifically articulate why X does this or Y does that, we can say, if you want to be healthy, stay in a healthy weight range that we've already set aside, eat a variety of foods, and, you know, try to stay within your budget of calories, carbs, proteins, make sure you don't have micronutrient deficiencies. We'd be pretty certain, I would say, that that is what we're definite on.
Right. Yeah. That's about the one thing.
Well, because you touched on it on one of the earlier episodes, that your body regulates itself. It's not like we need to, like, there's a lot of automated processes within our body, like breathing, for example, involuntary process. Tons of chemical reactions going on, so kind of just let it do its thing without throwing a bunch of crap at it.
Yeah.
And trust that it knows how to do it well.
Yeah. That's made me think of like a parallel to the detoxing thing that you're touching on. Like, your body, liver and kidneys can do that on its own. But what if we took that same concept of those people who want to detox and cleanse the diet and took that same concept and applied it to breathing? Oh, no, don't breathe. I'm going to put you in this, like, scuba apparatus. It's going to breathe for you. Do this for 2 weeks. Don't breathe on your own.
Yeah. Well, we kind of do that with those masks and shit, the elevation masks.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a little off topic. I've been asked about a dozen times these last couple weeks about it because, and a lot of it had to do with the last couple UFC fights. They showed a couple of the guys on the undercard, like what they call like counting down the UFC, or I'm not sure the show. And they showed a couple of the guys, or one guy in particular, training with one of the masks on. I'm not sure which fighter it was, but a couple of people asked about getting one and how well that will help them increase their cardiovascular system.
Buy the Dick's Sporting Goods. I don't know how what kind of effect it have on you though. Like, it's supposed to increase your
red blood cells.
Yeah, your red blood cells.
But it's supposed to activate like how you're, like, say if you go to Colorado and train.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why Olympic athletes are Olympic communities up there.
Dick there.
And they, yeah, they train because it increases the red blood cells. But, and the research I've read, and again, it all could be skewed, is your body can only react to that for about 12 hours. And then it goes back to a normal red blood cell count. So if I wear it, train in here, I'll have an increase in red blood cells for up to 12 hours, and then it goes back. The reason why they do it up in Colorado, because they're there for months.
You're sleeping there, you're living there.
So they get a giant increase in red blood cells.
Can't wear the mask 24 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah.
So then when they go to their competition, wherever it may be, they're still up here, and eventually the red blood cell count will reduce as they get to normal, you know, altitude. But they go from up here and they come down, so they're still hot.
They've given their time. That's why you see fighters go out to like different venues a couple weeks prior, so their body can acclimate to the time zone, to the temperature, everything. Because sometimes that environmental shock will, it gets you sick. Your body's just like, yo, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and I've heard, and I don't know any research about this, so this is not my wheelhouse. But I've heard 2 weeks is what you want to do. You want to train there for 2 weeks and get yourself acclimated. And like you said, if you're wearing a training mask for like 1 or 2 hours out of the day, that's not even going to scratch the surface of giving you the benefit. again, there could be a ton of research that says otherwise, but then who's funding that research? Is it the people?
It's the companies that are selling it.
Because is it the UFC fighter that's also promoting? Like, look what I do and train. I'm a UFC fighter. You have to be very suspicious, and that's why I like question everything and just see where the facts come
down. Well, I've heard the researches before where, you know, they have one of the video research guys says, I wear it to train all the time and I take it off and I feel like I can breathe so much better. Everything moves better. I'm thinking, well,
because you were just restricting your breath. Of course you can breathe better.
Yeah. It's like wearing a weighted vest all day, then taking it off. I'm like, man, I just feel so much lighter on my toes.
I wonder why. Because you took the weighted vest off.
Yeah.
Same reason with the detox. Like, oh, I've been just starving my body for the last week. I feel better after not doing it. Yeah. Same reason you feel better after you get over a cold.
Well, I lost 6 pounds and my skin is pale and I feel like I'm going to kill over, but I lost some weight in the whole ordeal because I didn't eat anything except, lemon water? But see, that's how people look at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the research is...
Well, because a lot of it's market-driven research, but marketing
what they're trying to get.
Are saying they're doing the research.
It's, when it comes to weightlifting, it is, or strength and conditioning, it's how bigger did I get? You know, it's not how strong did I get, how much do I move?
Well, yeah, I was putting the weights back today, from what we were using, I watched this kid. He did a couple pull-ups, and he just stood in the mirror for a few seconds. And I was like, what's he doing? And he was getting so close to it. I was like, oh, okay. Like, you just want to see how much bigger he is.
He wants to see the pump.
Yeah.
He wants to see the pump. You know, it's, and then when it comes to nutrition, like, I see so much of those infomercials, like, 2 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, I watch infomercials 2 o'clock in the morning, if you're wondering. And it's always like, you know, I did this program for 30 days, and I lost 40 pounds. I feel great. I'm thinking, to me, I hear that, I'm thinking, that just sounds very dangerous, to lose that much weight, almost a pound a day, and to me, I'm like, that can't be healthy. And you look at these people, they go from really, really heavy to moderately heavy, and it just doesn't seem like it's a right
thing to push. Let me see
where
you're at
in
6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when we did our seminar, that's one of the things I said to someone that came up to me afterwards is, after you get done with this and lost all your weight, which is fine and good, but what new habits have you formed? What knowledge have you gained from it? You shouldn't be gauging your success in how much weight you've lost.
That's what we push for.
Yeah, but if you're going to keep it off and you form new habits and new knowledge and you're healthy, you're great, then you should, but most of the times that's not the case.
Yeah, we have this obsession with weight.
It's vanity, looks.
On both ends, it's weight loss and gaining
how big do I look?
You can get, and then we have fat shaming, and then body acceptance. It's just all around weight, like so much around weight, less about health.
Yeah, what do you think is the bottom of that, though?
I don't know.
It seems like it's sexuality. To me, that's my perception, is it's about looking the best. You want to look the best, you want to be accepted, and ultimately, like, the bottom of that is, you know, seeking companionship or whatever it is.
Well, I think it's kind of I think it's vanity, the biggest thing is, I want to look back, because again,
what?
I was like, hold on, what did I say?
We are biologically programmed to reproduce.
Yeah?
At our core, that is our goal in life. So what you want to do is to attract a mate.
Yeah.
So everything we do in our lives is to make ourselves better, to attract a mate.
Yeah, okay.
I thought you said repress the opposite sex. I was like, ooh, this one took a turn.
Yeah. I may be the wild card, but I didn't cross that line.
Wild card.
I don't want to repress anybody. Same sex, opposite sex.
Well, an example, I've heard the story where people were in this big, you know, office building, and they always kept complaining about the elevator taking so long. You know, they hit the button, it just takes forever. Mm-hmm. So they kept complaining to management and the ownership, saying, hey, the elevator's taking too long. So what the management did was they fixed the situation. And what they did was they put mirrors on the elevator doors and on the side of the doors, and everybody stopped complaining about it taking so long. Because now the people were looking at themselves in the mirror. Their mind was focused on how they look, checking their hair, checking what they look like. So a whole sense of vanity came into the fact where I'm going to make sure I look my best instead of complaining about this elevator taking too long. And I see that with the mirrors a lot in here is people work out, they'll do a lift, and then they'll go find the closest mirror and stand in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate to say this, but when I was 19, just starting working out, like, I did the same thing. 20, and I started getting bigger. Like, I was a small, not that I'm big now, but I was very tiny. I started lifting, I was in the 130s, like 138. And I would get a pump, after I gained 10 to 15 pounds, like, I'm getting jacked. I'm going to be like Jay Cutler or Ronnie Coleman. And like, I would get back, my brother and I get back from the gym, and we'd just be like, take our shirts off. Like, oh, we look jacked. But that's just how it's like. You see that the benefits paying off from your hard work, and you're like, yeah, I want to see more results. But that is a slippery slope of like body dysmorphia. So unhealthy.
But we should focus more on overall being healthy. We should work out to be healthy, to move better, so our muscles can do the things we want to do. So we don't walk up a curve and, you know, break an ankle.
Mm-hmm.
We should eat to be healthy. We shouldn't eat to starve ourselves or cut our weight down so we have a six pack or more developed muscles.
Look good for them selfies, bro.
Yes. Get your selfie stick just all day long.
All day, every 5 minutes. Get in my car, go in the grocery store, selfie. Hashtag healthy, hashtag groceries.
It's actually pretty good.
I mean, you see it all over Instagram.
You do. I mean, you do see it.
But now, that is the equal, though. Instead of looking in mirrors, instead of getting home, rushing home to look in the mirror, we take a selfie.
Yeah.
And then we look. You're on Snapchat. You're on Instagram. Yeah. You're on Facebook.
Look at everybody. Look at what I did today.
You're just taking pictures of yourself. Just every once in a while, you'll see someone on Instagram, and you look down through their stuff, and it's literally just their picture, their picture, their picture, their picture, their picture.
It's super weird.
It's just a collage of just their pictures. Just that same face, that same pose, because they've perfected it at this point.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to turn my head slightly.
Is it the duck face?
Yeah, I'm going to puff out my lips, and I'm going to look so good. It's just that same pose, and just different backgrounds. You're like, what the?
Yeah. But again, the research shows us that if we lose weight, it doesn't matter how much weight we lose, and if we gain muscle mass, we're healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, that research is skewed to the fact that it's media-driven because they can sell money on that. Nobody's going to make a lot of money saying, oh, if you just do these monetary lifts the right way and you eat these foods in a monetary way, you're going to be healthy. You're going to live a long time. But you may not look like you're healthy because I know a lot of bodybuilders that they look – they're huge, but they're not healthy. I mean, I've seen some in here. They'll grab a scoop. Like, they'll get the big protein powder, you know, the big, you know, 5 pounds of it. Normally, you're supposed to scoop it into a cup of water, a cup of milk. They'll just scoop it right down their throat and then just drink water.
They should snort it. They'll just snort it.
Okay.
Don't snort it.
Don't snort it anymore. Yeah, no, don't shoot it in the syringe. Well, how about this? We all probably have grandparents or we know somebody that's elderly that has those pill packets. Yeah. You know, it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Right. I've seen guys younger than me have those things. And they're like, they take 6 or 7 pills a day. I'm like, what are you doing to yourself?
Yeah.
And some of these pills are like, look like horse pills.
Clearly, we don't know what we're doing from like a medical standpoint. We can't tell you how some of these things work. So, supplements.
Let me just isolate all these different supplements and just take them all at the same time. Have no idea how they're going to react with each other.
Yeah.
And then 20 minutes later, I'm in the bathroom.
And I'm not going to do blood work to check to see if it's ruling my kidneys or liver.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You tell someone to do blood work. I don't need blood work. I'm healthy. I'm fit. Well, maybe you can't do certain things you're doing. Then they got these big bodybuilders like Cutler and Coleman and guys like that have these, I take this stuff every day. And they just push it. And guys see that and like, well, they take it. Why can't I?
Yeah. And like we said in an earlier podcast, though, I don't know how much that most people care about health because from what Dave and I said, we didn't start off wanting to be healthy. We're starting like want to be big, and again, want to be like sexy, whatever it is.
You're sexy. Don't
worry
about it.
Thank you.
Please. Took it from the wild card.
Yeah.
You're sexy too,
Dave. Thank you.
This is awkward.
We just changed the name to Functional Fundamentals to the Sexiness Podcast.
Yeah.
You didn't know what you're in for,
Kevin. No, I guess I didn't.
New name change.
We just see you complimenting each other all day. Do you think we're in the best mood on Sunday? Because we just compliment each other all day.
Good for you.
Man,
guys.
I feel so good. I'm complimenting Mike on his nice hair.
He looks great. Good
hair. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, we need you to help fix Brett's.
Yeah.
We need you to charm some people.
We're texting each other. I'm like, oh, my.
We talk about your handsomeness when you're not around.
Don't worry about it. My phone was like having absurd typos because I'm typing too quick and there's a lag on it. And I was like, apologizing for all the typos because Dave could probably barely read my text. He's like, it's all right. We'll just have Mike send him handsome self down to Verizon to charm him to get you a new phone. This is making Kelly so uncomfortable.
Yeah, just a little.
That's all right. It's
welcome to our world. It's a beautiful world with beautiful hair.
She's going to start checking my phone for text messages from guys now.
Yeah. She's like, you and Dave have some odd conversations.
Yeah.
Get out of my phone, woman. Try it.
So, research. Cool subject.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, that point was
awesome. We completely went off track. I forgot what we were talking
about. Let's talk about the 21-day fix.
Oh, is that the Advocare? What's the Advocare? And I'm going to go ahead, and I've had so many people ask me about that. Like, oh, I'm after the holiday season, after Christmas, I'm going to be doing my cleanse, my 21-day cleanse and this and that. And the research shows you lose weight. And me being, and probably me being more around you, it's like, well, duh. You don't eat anything for those 21 days. Mm-hmm. Of course you're going to lose weight.
Yeah.
So...
So I've had multiple people, nurses, who to me are educated people that work in healthcare, you would think.
So in other words,
they know stuff about their body. And so then they would come up to me and ask me, or just tell me, that because they're excited about doing this 21-day fix. And I'm like, that's okay. I mean, I'm excited for you to, you know, you want to lose weight and get healthy, but like, let's talk about what you're going to do after 21 days. And, oh, by the way, what are you taking during the 21 days? And then I just remember the one girl was like, oh, it's like this pill and that pill. I think I have to do a couple powders. And I was like, what's in it? She's like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, you don't know what you're going to put into your body? Like, I was like, is Advocare, maybe it is, I don't know, but is Advocare, like, backed by the FDA?
No, the Advocare's big push on was sports. They're the ones that try to say that all their stuff is passable for the NCAA in professional sports.
It's popular.
Really. It's so popular.
Does it have banned substances in it? So that's what you're saying?
I'm sorry?
It doesn't have any banned substances?
No, it has zero banned substances. Okay. That's their push. There's zero banned substances in it.
So I just don't know. Like, that's fine. And, like, sometimes I'm like, okay, you know, I think a lot of people like to do that stuff to then, like, jumpstart their weight loss.
Like, the resolutions thing.
Yeah, like, okay, all right. But, like, I would hope that you have a plan. Yeah. Like, okay, day 21 or day 22.
Pizza.
No.
No.
Like, yes, pizza, but maybe one slice and, like, maybe a salad? Or, like, how are you going to get your body back into normal? Because 21 days...
That's a slice.
Because 21 days is, you know, minimal. I mean, I couldn't do that for 21 days. Like, I think me and Brad both, we, like, really like to eat food, and we're not... I mean, we watch what we eat, but at the same time, if we want to go get some pizza, like, we'll get pizza because you can't just take away everything that, like, because food is really comforting to a lot of people, and you can't just, like, cut yourself off.
I just like it to eat it.
Well, I think they want some, like, grand gesture to start, like, a new, a quote-unquote new chapter in their life. And it's like, you don't need that. Like, changes, there shouldn't be, like, we've all... experience like large changes in our life, whether it be like a loss of someone you love, like it's painful and you don't want to go through it. So why are you voluntarily putting yourself through this large change that you know you're not going to stick with? Changes should be implemented small and continuous.
But see, that's how Advocare sells their main product. Is they say, hey, do this 21-day fix. It's going to make you lose all this weight. It's going to make you feel better. It's going to drain. And I've actually heard the sales pitch before. It's going to drain all the negativity and all the bad, you know, food out of your system. It's going to clean your colon. It's going to do all this kind of stuff.
Your body does that itself.
Right. No. But this is how they sell it. But again, but see, most people, they're not educated in that sense where they do that. They hear that and they're like, oh, and you know, the best line I always hear, it's like hitting a reset button for your body. It's like hitting a reset button. So, so you do it and then you can start over from scratch.
Maybe we should just like kind of kill you, then revive you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of thing. I mean, it's like you think about, and like you said, for 21 days. And the scary thing is, they do this for 21 days, and on day 22, they go eat their pizza or they don't do anything else. It's like, okay, why can't you just do small things a day? Like start walk a half a mile, and then you know eat more vegetables, and then day two walk 3/4 mile, eat a little bit more vegetables and fruit. Just every day, just increase what you're doing to build that habit.
Exactly.
Because you know, I've heard different things, but to create a habit, it's like either 21 or 28 days straight. You have to do something. Yeah, well, you can't do a cleanse for 21 days and just do another 21-day cleanse.
And then you broke your, like, 27 years of habits that you've had. I don't really...
Yeah.
You're breaking it with, like, starving yourself.
And they don't understand, like, the concept of the ebb and flow of, like... We all have different amounts of willpower, so if it's, like, really easy for me and I get through it, maybe on... day 22, I'm not going to go as crazy, but you know, someone else who has very little willpower, and they're holding out day one, and they're just sweating bullets, and they finally get through it. And day 22, they're going to go crazy because they've, you know, suppressed so much urges, and psychologically it's going to be hard for them because, like you said, food is comforting. And not to get off of the 21 day challenge, but I think we are great examples of moderation as far as dietitians go, because we get a lot of questions about, oh, you gotta eat perfect. I'd love to come over to your house and see what's in your cupboards. It's probably just all perfect food. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like, what perfect food? Like, no, like, we preach moderation. That, like, be healthy. What we know from research, and we can definitively say this is to be healthy, we do that. And then we still allow ourselves to have fun and go on vacation. And, you know, I still consider today vacation because we just got in from Florida and we went to Panera and had a Danish cheese.
Danish
is that? Or something. I don't know what it is.
It was delicious.
Cheesy Danish.
but we split it.
We did split, but that's truly what dietetics and healthy nutrition is about. It is about maintaining a balance of healthy and indulging a little bit and not going crazy and still trying to be as healthy as you can. And then you get checked up and maybe you get new information and you form a new opinion. Oh, maybe I thought I was doing a great job, but my cholesterol is really high and I have a heart family history of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. Maybe I need to do a better job. And then you change some habits from there, and these little fine tunes based off new information you keep getting on your checkups. That's what it should be about.
Exactly. I mean, I get kind of something you said where, you know, people look at you like, oh, you probably eat perfect all day long. And people ask me, well, how you probably train every day, don't you? I'm like, no. I'm like, I train maybe hard one day a week and maybe get two or three other workouts in there a day. It's typically how I feel. And most of the times I'll train for 10 hours a day and I'm thinking, I'm tired, I'm gonna go home. Now, I don't want to be at the gym anymore.
Yeah.
They're like, how can you just go home? I'm like, because I'm tired. I want to go home and rest.
Yeah, you need to listen to your body.
I don't need to work out every day. My job is to make sure my body is efficient enough to move well, and I can be on my feet for 10 hours a day or whatever and not collapse. Yeah. I mean, it was funny. I went to a seminar last weekend, last Sunday, and I was in the room with a lot of powerlifters and bodybuilders. These guys were just making me look tiny, just huge, muscular guys. They said, okay, everybody squat. I'm the only one that had the perfect squat. Everyone else is squatting, making funny noises, knees shooting one way, falling off the side, falling off the left. I'm like, okay, you guys are anywhere from twice my size to maybe a little bit bigger than I am, but you can't move. So what's more important?
Yeah, and it seems a little bit similar to nutrition, where you don't really need to do that, I wouldn't say that much, but you don't need to go that crazy to be healthy from a fitness standpoint. You don't need to deadlift 900 pounds to be healthy. Get in the gym,
that's
work
kind
out.
Of unhealthy, but yeah.
Exactly. So you see these people extreme, same thing with dietitians. You have the dietitians who have eating disorders or that, like, you want to say something to them, but, you know, probably shouldn't. Then you have the other end where they're just obese and they don't care. Same thing with fitness. You have these crazy, just ginormous people that are unhealthy, can't move, and you have maybe people who are on the other side of the spectrum. But to be in the middle and be healthy, it doesn't seem like it takes that much effort. You don't have to be a real champion of willpower and habits to be healthy from a nutrition or a fitness perspective.
Well, did I show you guys the video of the bodybuilder running against the football player?
Yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah. And the football player, you looked at him, he just looked like a normal guy. He wasn't huge. He was just in decent shape. He just kind of looked like us. And then you looked at the bodybuilder, was twice this guy's size. You never saw the video, have you? Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy was morphed him. Jumped off the line and ran a 40-yard dash. It looked like this guy was almost kind of looked like the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz, just moving kind of real slow. And then, you know, I always advocate a lot is to develop power, we have to really work on a decelerator muscle. So working a lot of posterior movements, like posterior chain. So this guy's moving so fast, his hamstring snapped, and then he couldn't stop. So he rolled his ankle and then tumbled over because he had so much strength that he couldn't slow it down. And the guy maybe got 15 yards before his hamstring pulled. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept is just because you're big doesn't mean you're actually in shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the guys that, like, if we had the zombie apocalypse, I'd hang out with a bunch of bodybuilders because I'd just outrun them all and they'd be feasting on those guys forever.
Yeah, biting through all that muscle.
Yeah. But I mean, you see it a lot. I mean, I've gone to a lot of seminars, a lot of conferences, and a lot of the headliners are ex-powerlifters or ex-bodybuilders. And most of them don't move well. A lot of them have canes or just they look like they're in so much pain moving around. And it's all the damage they did to their body. And I know we've hammered a lot on bodybuilders, but some stuff like Louis Simmons over at Westside, he's had several injuries, and he's just now starting to understand the whole idea about proper mobility and proper stretching and proper, you know, load and stuff like that. And the guy's had a back surgery, I think, and a couple knee problems, mm-hmm. and he's still lifting high amounts of weight. And he's, I think, starting to understand that it's important to lift the heavy weight for what they do, but now I think he's starting to understand that, you know, quality of life is also important.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to lift heavy amounts of weight, you also have to do these all these little tiny things to do it correctly. So your livelihood, I guess, is still good.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to talk to, I wouldn't say those people because I don't mean Westside Barbell specifically, but that population of people, because our scope is being healthy and being functional, and their scope of what they're looking at is ultimately being successful is being big
being
or strong.
Big as they possibly can.
So they might say, yeah, I have back pain or I have this pain or I've had this many surgeries, but I can deadlift 800 pounds and I can squat 600 pounds, whatever it is. They don't care. That's their end-all, be-all. As long as they can lift that much weight and or that they look that good or in their mind they look that good, then they are successful. And they probably look down to us the same way we're looking at them. Like, what are you doing? Like, you guys are small. You work out?
At what point are we projecting our ideals onto them?
Yeah.
When they don't, that's not
they don't.
They
could care less.
It boils down to as far as, like, what their goals are, what our goals are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's a very thin line. It's like you want to help people, you want to educate them, but do they care?
I would say a large portion don't, but I would love for John Quinn to come on the podcast and talk about it because he is a successful bodybuilder who is over at Westside Barbell and trains with Louie and does the podcast with him, and he has since changed the way he does things and trains and doing proper forms and moving better, and I think he'd be a good person to get his side of the story from being a bodybuilder who is valuing how he feels and moves and just see what the bodybuilder scene is like, since we talk a lot about bodybuilders. So I think let's get their side of the story.
Well, power lifters, I have respect for because they're actually doing a competition. But I've met some power lifters that can't even tie their own shoes, mm-hmm. but they're lifting massive amounts of weight. I'm not necessarily advocating that. Bodybuilders in the sense that I really don't agree with a lot of what they do is mm-hmm. because the way they lift is even wrong, mm-hmm. I think, because what they'll do is they'll do a lot of isolation. They'll do a lot of heavy reps. They're not developing power. They're trying to get as much size as they possibly can, which that's really not important when it comes to...
It's important to them, though.
I guess you're right. It's important to them. But it's not too important for longevity and living well, which...
Actually, they...
That's our avocation to everything.
They seem to die quicker than the morbid... I don't have no research to back this up, but... Let me preface that. But they seem, from my observation, that they die quicker than people who don't work out and who are morbidly obese.
Yeah. And... I've heard that before.
And I'm not saying that's because they're doing bodybuilding, because there's the drug usage in bodybuilding community is just insane. And I'm not talking just about HGH or steroids. Even cocaine's pretty big amongst the bodybuilders, too. So, you know, the culture of eating that many calories, and it just doesn't work for health and wellness.
Well, when I told you about those guys eating basically spoonfuls of powder protein and having the pill pockets.
Yeah.
Those are bodybuilders. And I'm thinking, like, that doesn't look healthy. And then they go into the locker room and just blow it up. I mean, literally blow it up. You walk in, you hear, blah, blah, blah. It's just disgusting. And they're in there for 20 minutes. And then it's just...
So just like their gastrointestinal health is...
It's like,
so
okay,
poor.
When typically that happens to me, I'm calling, you know, typically all the doctors I know and say, hey, this just came out of me. You know, what should I do? And, you know, I've read several research books from, like, Paul Check and a bunch of holistic guys, and they're basically saying is if things come out of you not well, that means the inside of you is not well. So it should always –
That's your receipt.
That is the best line I've ever heard. How good's your receipt?
Yeah.
Do you want to return it? Well, I mean, it's the thing. It's like, you know, when you go to the restroom, it's basically what your body's expending out. And so it's your waist. If your waist is that bad, that means the inside of your body's jacked up.
Yeah, get one of them poop charts.
Yeah.
I know you guys, they have it out there. Like, what does your poop say about you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I
posted on Facebook once.
So what's the research on your poop chart?
Yeah.
What's the research on your poop chart?
Well, you want it to be a... consistent form, like it's coming out of a toothpaste, how it's not, it's all one log.
I heard an earthy smell.
Earthy smell? Well, it's kind of like the wine connoisseurs where they talk about the smell of it. Is it a forest floor, hint of lemongrass? No, we don't smell it.
The scent is supposed to be important. The
firmness of it, if it's solid.
Yeah.
If it looks like deer pellets, then there's an issue. Yeah.
But basically, like Brad touched on, like earthy tones, earthy smell, and then like kind of like solid, like mm-hmm. not too solid, not hard.
That's one thing I didn't consider.
Get down there and grab it.
I'm so used to talking about like this stuff just being in the medical field. When we were doing a seminar, which was, for people who don't know, was at a gym, and I was going over like urine color, it didn't occur to me until I was at the gym, like, I wonder if anyone thinks this is odd that we're talking about urine color, because it's completely natural to me.
And see, I think it's a great, and that's I think it's great too, because people always ask me all the time.
I always pay attention.
How do I feel? Like, am I hydrated?
I'm like, oh, I need more water.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And people always ask me am I hydrated or not? I can't tell if I'm hydrated. Do I drink enough water? Enough water? I said, well, look at your urine.
Pee look like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it brown? If it is, drink more water. Mm-hmm. If it's clear, drink less. You want that happy medium. You're like, oh, so like a Sunday lemonade?
Is it neon? Sure. You're taking too many supplements.
If it's like glows.
Yeah. Is it glow in the dark? Too many supplements. Back off.
Yeah. You take that giant multivitamin.
Straight clear for a long period of time, maybe you're overhydrating.
Yes. That's like when you drink a lot of beer and then it breaks the seal and it's just like, it's come at me. It's all water.
Yeah,
it's all clear. But I mean, that's the thing, is it all depends on how our body is, and that's mm-hmm. and everybody doesn't understand that. Oh well, I had this, and then I hit the bathroom because it just all that food just tears me up. Well, then stop eating that food.
But it's so delicious.
Yeah, and research has shown us that. But my thing is, we're so cupped on these like big headlines. Mm-hmm. You know, lose this much weight, gain this much muscle. Then they read the research, and it's all just weird, stupid, like big words that don't mean anything. Like, oh, we did a 2-time blood or blind placebo blind study that this thing is so great and you can lose so much weight. And then in the very, very fine print, is results may vary.
Yeah. You know, I kind of feel bad for the public because it's really complicated. Like, I get super frustrated with it too, because it changes the way you practice. So you go in one day, you're doing this, and this is what the research said, and then new guidelines come out, and now you're doing opposite or whatever. And it's just, like, really frustrating. But also, like, if you're just a general person in the public, you have no health background, you have no research background. But yeah, like, all these words sound weird. Double-blind study. They don't know that there's different studies out there. What do they mean? What's best? What's not best? Mm-hmm. Then also, they have to do, like, what you have to dig through research and read it all and see who's funding it and all this.
Right.
Shell company for this company. Like, who has time for all that? So, yeah, it's super frustrating, and it's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that a lot of the stuff's guided by money and profit instead of, like, the truth.
Yeah.
Like, what is the healthiest and best way to get results and a bunch of people working towards that goal? That's not how it is. You have 1,000 different goals with 1,000 different people running to those different goals and all trying to get money and sell you a product, and a lot of people don't care if it hurts you or not.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I mean, look about just how much research does someone do to buy a car? Or how much research someone does to buy a shirt or mm-hmm. a pair of shoes or go on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we research for months and months and months to figure out, okay, what's the best price? Is this the best thing for me? But then when it comes to buying a supplement off the wall, they talk to some guy at GMC and the guy goes, oh, bro, that's a good one. I take it. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
No, there's like no research. It's like, I'll take it because so-and-so said to take it.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'm guilty of that too, not in a nutrition sense, but in other senses, because we only have a certain amount of time. So the things I value the most, I spend a large amount of time researching and reading into, and I'm sure Kelly's sick of me reading philosophy books and things like that.
I thought you were
going to
say gaming.
Yeah, gaming too. Hey, a bunch of gamers here. I try to be super serious with my philosophy. Oh, sorry. Gaming?
Philosophy's good. I've read some. Well, you guys have seen some of the books I've had at my house.
Yeah, I like them. I like
Brad,
all that stuff.
Plenty of games.
Yeah. But
see, I read a lot, and I read a lot because I try to have more understanding of what's really happening.
Yeah, but a lot of times, like, the things we value, we spend the most time doing or researching. So back to, like, we've been throwing out all sorts of car analogies through the theme of all this, but we seem to, like, I don't value cars, so maybe I do less research on cars, and then
I don't just take someone's word.
Yeah, I take someone's word. Like, oh,
I asked somebody who actually values cars when it comes
to
cars.
Yeah, so we have a mutual friend, Olaf, who's all into cars. Like, I'm not into it. He'll talk for hours if you want to talk
Johnny
about it.
Johnny, too.
Yeah, they love cars. I don't care. I'll just ask one of them, and they tell me I go for it. So maybe those people who are taking the supplement from the GNC guy, they maybe not care. They don't care about health.
They're just starting. They're just getting into the diet, so they're like, well, if I'm just starting this, I don't know how it's going to go. Why am I going to invest all this time and money into something I have no idea what kind of benefits I'm going to reap? So let me just do as little as possible, see if that helps, and then later I'll do more. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the mentality.
Yeah. It's your body. That's the thing that drives me. It's again a car. I can understand someone like, it's a piece of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have it for the next 5 or 6 years, or the shoes, or computer, or whatever. I'm gonna have it for a few years. Or this apartment, I'm only gonna have it for a couple years.
To value that, if you're not raised and really taught like
that, your body's the only thing that you can't return.
Well, really, and
but at the same time,
and taught the benefits and pitfalls of like healthy body versus a not healthy body. Like I can attest to. Growing up kind of in the country where you have a lot of bad food and a lot of my relatives are overweight, and that's just kind of the status quo. Like that's what it is. It's just accept it. There's no rhyme or reason behind it as far as they're concerned. They're just like that's
simply
what it is.
Yeah,
that's normal. That's what to expect. When you ask them like, oh, why does your hip hurt? Oh, I'm just old. Like so there's no research. They're not trying to feel better. So that was instilled in me at a young age, and until jiu-jitsu and until I actually started getting into something athletic, I didn't really care or know until I started to see like, oh, well, like I'm doing this activity and you know, that tires me out. But it wasn't even until like a year after doing like jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai that I started really paying attention to what I was eating. Cause I was like, man, I feel crappy after this practice. And I tried to think back like, well, maybe it was this that I ate beforehand or this that I ate afterwards, and that's when I started to. So it actually rose on my list of priorities.
Yeah, so as weird as you think of other people, like, why don't they do that? They probably think the same thing of you. Like, why are you obsessing about this? And you guys can go back and forth about, like, what your philosophy in life is, but at the same time, you both value different things, just like the bodybuilder values different things than what you value. And you kind of just have to accept that people value different aspects of their life. You can change your mind or not, but you have to understand why they're.
I understand that you can't. It's hard for me to understand how someone that's willing to, again, like if I'm not interested in something, but I want to do something with that. Like again, I'm not real interested in say my human body, like my body,
mm-hmm.
but I want to take a supplement because I want my body to be healthier. So I'm taking some interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I just grab things off of a shelf that I had no idea what's actually going to do to my body when I've even taken the step to do something relatively healthy?
Because the label said it would help you.
And just like Dave was saying, though, just think you're in a culture that didn't value health and fitness, and maybe you are slightly interested in it, but you have poor genetics, and you, from ground zero, you're obese or just say overweight. You have an uphill battle. You have a knowledge deficit. You have genetics going against you, or maybe not. You just have bad habits against
genetics,
you.
Genetics, culture,
yeah,
knowledge.
Yeah. So you have all these uphill. Perhaps. Yeah. You have all these obstacles in your way, and you really want to try. And you see one of those infomercials at 2 a.m., like you said, and you join a gym and you grab a supplement and you do it for 3 months, and it's just hard, and you're not seeing results. You're not Ronnie Coleman, because mm-hmm. I literally thought that I can be as big as Ronnie Coleman when I started lifting. I'm sure I said that 1,000 times, but mm-hmm. I thought that I can be that big. And until you start doing it, and you're like, oh, this guy's doing this. Oh, this guy did steroids for 15 years, and he's only this big, and this guy's twice the size. And you start doing 2 and 2. Like, they don't know that. So that big GNC guy who may or may not be on cycle, give them a supplement. They're like, I look nothing like that. I'm just going to quit. And they give up because they have all these barriers.
So they're already going into it with a negative thought pattern, saying, well, if it doesn't work, I can always just go back.
Well, don't we all have maybe not an ideal thought of what things are when we first start? Like I did lifting. I thought that you can be
Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that they can't be the model on the swimsuit catalog.
If you don't know, as far as like whatever your goal is, like within that field, like, if you don't know enough about it to set smart goals,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to fail, and it's discouraging, so you don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's just the biggest thing when it comes to like the research, going back to that, is most of it's skewed to make money. And that's the bad part, because mm-hmm. you don't have any of these independent blind study tests that they're not in somebody's pocket.
Yeah.
And it's almost hard to find real true research anymore.
Because yeah. nobody wants to just give up money.
Yeah. And
well, it's not giving up money, but like what Brad said earlier, there's no cause out there to help the whole for the best.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one person out there saying, okay, we're going to make a product that's going to help everybody, and we're going to give it at a cost that everyone can afford. No, we're going to give it at a cost that we make a killing of money for. Or I'm going to make this product that's probably going to help only 5% of the people, but we're going to market to the 90%.
I mean, again, you just went back to the product.
Right. That's what I'm...
So even if there was research around that product, it'd be skewed. Even if it had the best intention.
But I'm saying there's nothing out there that the research is geared just to help to say, okay, yes, this product is good, this product is bad. There's always some kind of skew result to it, because it all based around money. And I understand that we're in the business to make money,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes to certain things, like I'm sure, I mean, you've given out free advice,
mm-hmm.
and I've given out free advice, and yes, the podcast.
I've never given anything out for free.
And he doesn't give out anything. But the idea is, we're trying to do it to, one, give a better idea of what we're trying to accomplish, and hopefully in turn grow our business, mm-hmm. but as well as try to give enough advice to people so when they are trying to make a decision on a product, of a nutrition or a fitness programming, they have some knowledge based about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, if you have good knowledge, you're going to succeed in almost anything you do.
FDA puts out the food pyramid. That's free.
Oh my God, that thing is a joke.
It's not a pyramid anymore.
It's a plate.
Yeah. It's a plate. Because before it was a pyramid, then it was like a building or something with a guy running up the side.
Yeah,
of it.
It was the one before the plate.
Now it's a plate. Now it's a plate and a cup.
Next it's going to be a pentagon.
but the general idea is good. You need to have a variety.
Yeah, and I think it's more relatable that people see a plate. No one walks outside and see a pyramid. Oh, food. And you see a plate. Oh, this is what my plate should look like. It's very practical.
Yeah, people can
so
look at
it. So I think it's a better approach.
I
but
just thought we were all Egyptians when I was young.
But going back to the research and, like, say, supplement, I'm not an expert, and I don't know that they coincide well. So say I'm selling amino acids, and I have the best intentions, and I want to do it ethically, and I hire an independent company to do all the research, and I'm already in production of these amino acids, and I have it, and then I get all this research out, and it says, okay, actually it's not amino acids, it's omega-3s. Well, I just had all this production and overhead cost of amino acids, and now I have to stop production on that, take a loss on all that, because it'd be ethical to sell things that have false promises,
mm-hmm.
and then I start making amino acids, and I continue research, and I found, okay, maybe it's a combination of amino acids and omega-3s. So if you're truly how a person should be, of trying to find the truth, trying to do research, adjusting according to research, it might not be a profitable endeavor for you. It might not be beneficial to do both. But, you know, I think it is what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. We're putting product out there based on incomplete data.
Yeah, I would agree. We're doing product based off incomplete data, and also we don't know the full picture. And when back to your point of the subjects, how many people were in the study? Were they already conditioned athletes, deconditioned athletes? Did they have any disease processes? Like, trying to streamline all that is very problematic and hard. And it almost seems in nutrition, the greater the population size in studies, the less results you show.
The less significant results.
Yeah, because it's more diverse. You have so many different variables. And I think that's just accounting. We don't know the big picture, and there's just too many different variables mm-hmm. to account for that can't be captured. So,
I think as far as research goes, like for general public and supplements and everything, don't trust something just because it's backed by research.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it's legit. Like, if
mm-hmm.
you really want to start some sort of supplement or something like that, go to your primary care doctor, maybe have them run some blood tests, see if you need anything. Do you need anything, or do you just need a healthy diet? The only thing that the doctor or nurse practitioner might suggest is a multivitamin. That's probably it. That's probably mm-hmm. all you need. You don't need anything extra. But anyways, that's just what I would try to preach to everybody, because honestly, nobody really knows. People dedicate their lives to researching one thing. Mm-hmm. Like my one professor in college researched selenium for years. Like
that's all
selenium.
And what did he figure out about selenium?
Not much.
Yeah. It's very important. Selenium's very important.
You know what I mean?
But can't conclusively say anything.
You still can't conclusively say anything. So I wouldn't suggest just like trusting everything because it's backed by research or backed by this or that or anecdotal, you know, it worked for Brad, it's going to work for me. Everybody's different, so I don't know. I wouldn't suggest going out and spending all your money on supplements because you're going to come home and probably have a cupboard full of vitamins and supplements that you're never going to use.
We're going to get sued now by supplement companies.
Yeah.
There goes our sponsors.
Yeah. Can't keep a good sponsor these days.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up because we've actually got a lot of good information. So, Dave, I'm going to start with you today. What would you like to end with?
Trust your body.
God, get it more original.
Regulate itself. As far as nutrition is concerned, let it regulate yourself. Follow the advice of the two dietitians on here. Don't go and do anything drastic. Stay away from the cleanses, the supplements, outside of like a multivitamin. But yeah, just trust your body to do what it's biologically programmed to do.
Well said. That was better. I like how you explain yourself a little bit.
Yeah, so maybe don't cut me off in the beginning next time.
Okay.
I think my final message is on to Dave's and what Kelly said is if you're dead set on supplements, and of course don't trust just one research study, but look at the big picture, see how many years has this been researched, and then there's tons of just regional places like Australian Sports Institute, I think, has some good guidelines. There's some multinational institutions that have done a lot of studies on, like, say, creatine, for example. And you can see all their studies. They have all the links. They're published. I mean, you can go through the history. If you're hell-bent on taking a supplement, go towards those places and make sure you have their sources and see their research and see how many has been done and see the controversies and get the whole picture before deciding on it.
Okay. Last words?
If I have one last piece of advice for everybody, it's eat more fruits and vegetables.
Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome.